We've already seen from Colossians 4:13 that Paul, the apostle, is giving a personal testimony, that which he had himself seen regarding Epaphras. And he says of him, "For I bear him record that he hath a great zeal for you." And we looked a little bit at what zeal was. It's the opposite of being cold and formal and dead, but being alive and on fire and fervent in our lives and service for the Lord. And that was true of Epaphras, but I think it has a more specific reference here, because Epaphras was the pastor of the Colossian church. And so when Paul talks about his great zeal for them, in this text, the word zeal speaks of the intensity of Epaphras' feelings for his congregation. And by his congregation, I mean the people that God had set him over as their pastor. And it was primarily for them, but it did not end with them. It extended to others as well, as we'll see at the end of the verse. And so here's what Paul is telling them, that Epaphras had an ardent affection, a fervent care, a constant mindfulness, and a burning concern for them. He was very set on their spiritual well-being and their growth in the Lord as his charge. He was responsible for them before God. And, you know, like the Bible says, he had to give an account for them because God had set him over them, and he was to look out for their spiritual well-being. Paul, of course, was an example of this. You look at the next book, 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. He's telling about his feelings toward the Thessalonian church that he had founded by his preaching, and how concerned he was for their continuance in faith, and that they wouldn't be led astray or driven off from their adherence to Christ. Notice what he says in chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. He says, "Wherefore, when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone, or it's at our own expense and loss, we sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God, and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and to comfort you concerning your faith." In other words, we were driven away, but we didn't forget about you. We were very concerned for you. And so when we couldn't be there, we sent Timothy in our place to look after you regarding your spiritual needs. Verse 5, "For this cause, when I could no longer forbear, I sent to know your faith, how your faith was doing, lest by some means the tempter have tempted you and our labor be in vain." Or somehow the devil may have gotten in there and undone everything we had accomplished. "But now when Timotheus came from you unto us and brought us good tidings of your faith and charity, and ye have good remembrance of us always, desiring greatly to see us as we also to see you. Therefore, brethren, we were comforted over you in all our affliction and distress by your faith." Now, as we were really concerned for you, we sent Timothy to see if you were all right. We found out that everything was good, and so even though we're having all kinds of troubles here, we forgot all about that. We were so happy that you're doing well. That's a true heart. "For now we live, if you stand fast in the Lord." In other words, our very life depends on it. If you don't stand fast for the Lord, it'll kill us. If you do, we'll feel like life as well. What a heart. So what Paul is saying of Epaphras, which was true of himself, is that he took a very warm interest in them. And this is what led him to pray constantly for them. There's another example of that in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 16. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 16. Here you have another fellow minister with Paul, Titus. And Titus was involved in this collection of an offering to the poor saints from Greece here. But notice why he got so involved, why he wanted to be a part of that, what his concern was. He says, "But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you." In other words, he was really concerned for you and for this offering to be taken and be successful and to be a help to the other Christians who are suffering need. And it says, God, where does this care come from? Are we naturally careful for others like this? No, it's something God gives you. Why do parents love their children? God puts that in their heart so that they will do what it takes to raise those children and take care of them. That's a lot of work, a lot of difficulty. But yet, they care enough that they're willing to do that. And here's what he says about the Titus as a minister, that God had put in his heart an earnest care for them. And so, even though we didn't require it, he was willing to go to be a help in this regard to you. So there it is, a care from God for God's people in the heart of God's servants. And so what this tells us is that a minister must not be apathetic and indifferent toward his people. In other words, so caught up in his own concerns that people might be doing well, might be doing poorly, it makes no difference to him one way or the other. But rather, he should be warm and lively and affectionate in his preaching and in his praying and in his admonishing of the people. This is what God looks for. It's like Romans chapter 12, verse 11 says. It talks about being zealous or fervent. It gives a general rule, but yet it's something that applies to this as well as to everything else. Avoid laziness. It says, not slothful in your business. And our business is doing God's work in every area of life. What did Jesus say? I must be about my Father's business. That's what we should be. He says, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Don't just serve the Lord, you know, go through the motions and act like, oh, well, you can take it or leave it. It's not that important to you. It doesn't really matter. Just as long as you, you know, at least look good on the outside, do the bare minimum or whatever. No, there should be a burning zeal in us as we serve the Lord. And that's what Paul is saying was in Epaphras. Because if a minister does not have a heart for God and for God's people, he cannot minister effectively. You know, if the people think he doesn't care, he could care less whether I'm well or not, how much are they going to really be affected by his efforts, which will be poor efforts indeed. Let's look at another couple of places. 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Verses 2 and 3. Here's what Paul says to the Corinthians. Receive us. Remember, they were at a point of telling Paul, we don't want you anymore. We're listening to these other apostles now, and they're saying that you're no good. You're not really an apostle, and what you say isn't true. So we're taking them in your place. Well, he says, receive us. And then he says, look at our lives. Why would you reject us? Where have we hurt you? He says, we have wronged no man. We have corrupted no man. We have defrauded no man. Now, where have we injured you? Where have we stolen from you? Where have we made you worse than you were? You know, we haven't done anything harmful to you. And he says, I speak not this to condemn you, for I have said before that ye are in our hearts to die and live with you. All right, where are the people? In the pew? No, they're in his heart. And he's saying, I would die and live with you and for you. He told the Philippians the same thing. If you want to look with me at Philippians chapter 1, verse He's thanking God for their fellowship in the gospel from the very beginning, even until now. And then in verse 7 he says this, "Even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, or it is proper or fitting for me to think this of you, that God is going to fulfill your salvation in the day of Christ." Why? Because I have you in my heart. That's a very affectionate expression of someone that's very dear to you and that you care very much for. I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you're all partakers of my grace. And this is what he says, "For God is my record." And again, he appeals to God as his witness to the truth of what he's saying, because he makes strong statements. And you think, Paul, is this really how you feel, or are you just telling us this to kind of, you know, butter us up? No, God knows this is how I feel. "How greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ, with the very affections of Christ himself. I long for you all." And so, again, this strong affection and care for the people, which makes his ministry much more acceptable to them. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Let's look one more place. Look at the terms he uses to describe his feelings for them and his ministry toward them. Verse 7. "For we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherishes her children." This is talking about a nursing mother, or a nurse who cares for the child, even to feeding it. He says, that's how gentle we were with you, like a nurse caring for an infant. A suckling infant cares, you know, even as a nurse cherishes her children. "So being affectionately desirous of you, we were willing to have imparted unto you not the gospel of God only, but also our own souls, because you were dear unto us." He didn't say, "There, I gave you the gospel, that's all I'm responsible for." No, he said, "I gave myself for you. Laid my own life on the line for you because of our love for you." And then he says, "You remember, brethren," he talks about how he worked to support himself so he could minister to them. He talks in verse 10 how he lived a blameless life before them to be an example to them, and so as not to hinder the gospel and to show them what the gospel really looks like in a person's life. Verse 11, "And as you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children." Well, it's Father's Day. Paul says, "I loved you Thessalonian believers so much that I exhorted you and I comforted you and I charged you." Each one individually, even like a father caring for his own children. That was his heart toward them, and that was his behavior toward them. Well, you know what? This is also a two-way thing. If the Christian ministry is to really succeed and be effective, then it's also important that the people of God be careful in this way for their ministers. And we find that in the Bible too. Look at 2 Corinthians again, chapter 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 7. He's talking about Titus and how Paul was in great suffering at this time, and he was comforted by Titus' arrival and how Titus gave him news about the love of the Corinthians for Paul and their continued allegiance to him and his message. And he says, "And not by his coming only was I comforted, but by the consolation wherewith he was comforted in you." In other words, Titus was really encouraged by what he found when he came there. What was that? "When he told us your earnest desire, your mourning," notice, "your fervent mind toward me, so that I rejoice the more." In other words, Epaphras has a fervent mind toward his people. And here he's saying the people had a fervent mind toward Paul. Same word. They were zealous for Paul. How zealous? Well, let's look at what the Galatians felt toward Paul. Galatians chapter 4. Now, the Galatian church is another sad example of how people can get misled and get taken away from the truth that they've learned. Here's some people that were being affected by Judaizers, those who said that you had to go under the law of Moses and keep the law of Moses to be fully saved. You had to become a Jew to be circumcised if you really wanted to be accepted by God, which was a false doctrine. And they were listening to this, and they were turning against Paul. And Paul reminds them of their feelings toward him back when he first spoke to them and when they first came to the Lord, and how grateful they were and how much they appreciated him. He says, verse 13 of chapter 4, you know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the gospel unto you at the first. In other words, he had some physical affliction, some problem in his body that led him to go there and preach. And yet he says, my temptation which was in my flesh you despise not. You didn't reject me because of it, nor rejected, but you received me, how? As an angel of God. As if God had sent one of his holy angels to speak to you directly. Even as Christ Jesus. You received me as if Christ himself came to you. Now, isn't that what Jesus said? He that receives you receives me. He that receives me receives him that sent me. Well, he's saying they received him with that kind of open-armed, warm reception. And then he says, where is then the blessedness you spoke of? Remember how happy you were when you first came to the Lord? What happened? Evidently, this message you're listening to now isn't helping you and making you better. It's taking away from you what you once had. The blessedness you enjoyed. For I bear you record that if it had been possible, you would have plucked out your own eyes and have given them to me. If Paul had need for their eyes, they would have plucked them out and handed it to him. Here, Paul, take ours. That's how much they loved him and appreciated his ministry among them. Fervent minds toward their ministers. And this mutual love and care greatly promotes the gospel and men's salvation. When you have this kind of a situation in a church and among believers, people see that, and it's a great attractant. It really gets their notice and makes them stand up and say, hey, there's something here. Now, there are three reasons why Paul is commending the zeal of Epaphras to the Colossians. Why is he taking the time to tell them? You know, he's their pastor. They know him. They know what he's like. Why does Paul want to tell them about his zeal for them? Well, the first one is so that the church would have a greater appreciation and respect for Epaphras. Why was that important? Because that would make his ministry more effective among them. You know, if they looked down on Epaphras, if they didn't really think much of him, how would they really be able to receive what he had to tell them? It would taint his message and hinder it from being able to influence them the way it should. And so, in other words, their attitude toward the messenger would affect their attitude toward the message. And he wants to make sure Epaphras is a good man. We want you to be assured of that so that you will receive what he has to say for you and he can minister freely among you. We see Paul doing this many times. Philippians chapter 2. Notice what he says there. Philippians chapter 2. Verse 29-30, he's telling the Philippians about their minister, Epaphroditus. Sounds almost the same, but it's a different person. It says, receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness. Or be happy when he returns to you, and hold such in reputation. Honor him when he is with you. Why? Because for the work of Christ, he was nigh unto death, not regarding his life, to supply your lack of service toward me. In other words, to do what I needed in your behalf, he was willing to lose his own life. I mean, here's a fine man of God and who has done a great work, and he did it in your behalf. You should respect him and hold him in high regard. That's what he's telling them here. Another one is 1 Corinthians 4, Timothy. Now, Timothy was a young man, and it seems like he was kind of a timid man, and so he couldn't come in there and bowl him over and say, do what I say, you know, he would be a little nervous and laid back, and so they would tend to maybe despise him and overlook what he had to say, but he says, don't do that. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 17, Paul says, for this cause have I sent unto you Timotheus, who is my beloved son and faithful in the Lord. Or he tells about what a fine man he is, and then he says, who shall bring you into remembrance of my ways which be in Christ, as I teach everywhere in every church. In other words, he's going to tell you what I have to say, so you accept what he tells you as from me, and don't ignore it or pass it off. He says the same thing at the end of this book, chapter 16, verse 10 and 11. Why does he tell them about Timothy's good qualities? Here's why. Now, he says, if Timotheus come, see that he may be with you without fear. See, he was kind of a nervous, timid guy, it seems. For he works the work of the Lord as I also do. He's doing God's work just like I am. So you accept him just like you would me. Let no man, therefore, despise him, but conduct him forth in peace, that he may come unto me, for I look for him with the brethren. So there's a couple examples. There's a general rule about this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Now let me say this. Who is he telling them to do this toward? Good men. He tells them they're good men, then he says, now treat them with respect. You can't demand respect. You can't say, I'm the pastor, so do what I say. You've got to command respect. You have to earn it. And if you don't, people aren't going to pay attention. And that's why it's not just the office, it's filling that office properly that's important. And notice what he says in 1 Thessalonians and chapter 5, verse 12 and 13. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you, in other words, to acknowledge them, to regard them, and are over you in the Lord. Those are the people that have been placed in office in the church, and admonish you. That's their responsibility. You don't like getting admonished, do you? Don't do that. Do this. Ooh, that hurts. Well, that's their job. And to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. In other words, if they're doing the work in the way God wants it done, then you should esteem them highly in love and be at peace among yourselves. Don't start getting into these church fights and arguments that destroy the effectiveness and spirit of a church. And so he wants his ministry to be effective among them. Second reason, he wants to exhort the people to greater zeal for their own salvation by Epaphras' example. In other words, look at how zealous he is for you. Shouldn't you be zealous for yourselves? In other words, his example should provoke you to do likewise. Notice what he says in 2 Corinthians again, chapter 9. Here you have him setting an example before the Corinthians to provoke them to do likewise. Same idea. In this case, it's a case of the churches in Macedonia and Achaia were giving generously toward the offering for the poor saints. And he's saying, I want their zeal to produce the same thing in you. Chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. For I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Now, your willingness and your fire, your earnestness, and your enthusiasm to give has provoked others to give in the same way. And he's saying, I want you to know about Epaphras' zeal for your salvation and spiritual welfare, so you will have zeal for that in the same way. The other reason is that Paul was doing his duty to God. He had a duty to recommend those who were his fellow faithful ministers. You know, if ministers would build each other up and support each other and encourage one another and recommend one another where it's proper and where it's due, they would be a lot better off instead of pulling each other down, tearing at each other, and, you know, competing with each other, trying to build their ministry up by knocking another person's down. That's not what Paul did. Notice earlier in Colossians chapter 1, he's doing this all the time. We've already seen a number of examples of it. But right in Colossians itself, verse 7, he's commending Epaphras again. As you also learned of Epaphras, our dear fellow servant, who is for you a faithful minister of Christ. In other words, Epaphras is our dear fellow servant in the Lord and a faithful minister of Christ's gospel. See how he speaks well of him? Now, we saw in our reading this morning, if someone was not faithful, if someone was teaching error, he blew the whistle on him. He said, they're teaching you falsehood. Don't listen to them. But when it came down to, here's someone doing a good job and a faithful job for the Lord, he wanted to make sure that he drew their attention to that in order to encourage them to follow their teaching. Chapter 4 of Colossians, verse 7, we just saw recently, he did the same in regard to Tychicus, who was bringing this epistle to them. He says, all my state shall Tychicus declare unto you. Now, why should they listen to Tychicus? Because, he says, who is a beloved brother and a faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord. He's a good man. When he comes to you, you give him a warm reception and you listen to what he has to say, because he's going to tell you like it is. You can have confidence in his message. All right, now, there you have Paul telling about Epaphras' zeal for the Colossians, but notice it doesn't stop there. In chapter 4, verse 13, he says, he has a great zeal for you and them that are in Laodicea and them in Hierapolis. And so Paul is saying that the zeal of Epaphras did not stop with the Colossians, but that it's extended to neighboring churches as well. It went to other churches beyond the bounds of Colossae. Now, what is this all about? Well, let's see who he's talking about. Them that are in Laodicea. Or he's talking there about the believers in the Laodicean church. He'd already referred to this church in chapter 2, verse 1, when he said, I would that you knew what great conflict I have for you and for them at Laodicea. In other words, Paul was concerned for not only the Colossians, but the Laodiceans, and not only them, but as many as have not seen his face in the flesh. Evidently, he had never been there personally. All right, so for them that are in Laodicea and for them in Hierapolis. Hierapolis. Or for the saints that were members of that church. All right, so Epaphras is caring for them as well. Now, these two cities were also located in Greater Phrygia, in the Lycus River Valley, and they were nearby to Colossae. Laodicea was one of the seven churches of Asia Minor that Jesus sent an epistle to. You remember in chapter Revelation 3, verse 14, he sent an epistle to this church. And under the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. All right, so that was one of the seven churches that Jesus wrote to in the book of Revelation. This church was 11 miles from Colossae, and it was a center of banking and of the wool trade. And Hierapolis was located 6 miles from Laodicea, and this city was noted for its warm mineral springs, where it had hot baths in that water, and it also had a trade in dyed wools. So that's a little bit about those two cities. But what we want to notice is that Epaphras was known to these two churches. And it may be that he had ministered to them at some time. But whatever the case, they were included in his prayers and in his affections and in his care as a minister. He prayed for them. Now, why did he pray for more than his own church? Well, we need to recognize as Christians that we're not alone, that God has his people throughout the world, and that they are found in many churches, and that we need to take these churches to heart and do what we can to support them and help them, and at least, if nothing else, pray for them. We should be praying, like Paul said, with all prayer and supplication for all saints, not just ourselves. And Epaphras was doing that. You remember what Paul said about himself in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 28? He talks about how his heart was and his practice was as an apostle. He says, "Beside those things that are without or outside, that which comes upon me daily, the care of all the churches." See, an apostle was not limited to any one location. They had a worldwide ministry, and he cared for all the churches throughout the known world of that time that existed in his lifetime. And so Epaphras, in a smaller way, not an apostle, he cared for the churches of his immediate area, the Lycus River Valley there in Greater Phrygia. And so the reason that Paul mentions these churches is to show us that we're to take a special interest in those churches of like faith and practice, churches of right doctrine and life that are in proximity to us. And that we should do all that we can to aid them in their work for the Lord by both prayer and effort. I think this is something God looks for from us. And you say, well, how do we determine that? I will say this, as far as our own personal circumstances, the closest church I'm aware of, like us, and you know, that's along the same line, is down in Hornell. And we did have quite a few mutual working together back when they had a pastor that we had come to know and been friends with. He left and went to Arizona, and the new pastor, we haven't really gotten to know so much. When they were in between, we used to go down there and preach for them at times. But there's that church, and some churches in the whole state, there might be a handful that I'm aware of. Maybe there's others that I don't know about, but this kind of church is kind of few and far between. So we do what we can, but we should be at least aware of them when able and praying for them and working with them as the opportunity presents itself. And so we have a special responsibility to take to heart and to help and be involved with those churches that are near to us, that we labor together for our common Lord. I'll give one example of it, and we'll close. Romans 15. Romans chapter 15. You remember I mentioned in 2 Corinthians they were taking a collection up. Well, here's Paul referring to that in verse... I'm going to start with verse 25. "But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints with an offering for their need. For it has pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem." So what had happened was there were Christians in Jerusalem who were suffering for their faith. They had been brought into a condition of poverty. They did not have their basic necessities. And the Christians way up in Greece, these are two provinces in Greece, Macedonia and Achaia. There were a number of churches found in those areas, you know, like Philippi and Thessalonica and Corinth and others. And those churches said, we need to do what we can to help our brethren who are suffering. And so they got together and said, let's all make an offering. And they made this offering, they brought it all together, and they sent it down by some of the brethren to the needy saints at Jerusalem in Judea. And this way they were able to do more, because with more churches you have more funds available. And so they were able to be a benefit and help to their Jewish brethren. And that's a good example of how churches can work together to meet a common need and minister for the Lord. And so the Lord help us to be a little, not too closed-minded and self-focused, but to look up and look about and look on the fields and see others who are doing the work along with us, and pray for them and aid them as we can. Let's close in prayer.